Good morning. It's 11 minutes before the hour. You're listening to NPR's Morning Edition over Raven Radio, KCAW in Sitka, where it's 35 degrees with snow showers this morning. Today is Friday, March 2nd, 2012. I'm Robert Woolsey with Raven News. Three of the four basketball teams in today's Region 5 3A championship games are from Sitka, and both the boys and girls games will be rematches from last year. The Sitka Wolves will take on the defending champion Mount Edgecombe Braves for the regional title. The Sitka Lady Wolves have another chance against the defending champions Craig Panthers. The Lady Wolves bumped Haynes into the loser's bracket yesterday with a 56-40 win, though the game was close through the first three quarters. Sitka High Activities Director Mike Vieira says the Glacier Bears put a special zone in place to shut down Sitka's center, Soraya 80, but the plan backfired when Megan Reed began to find the basket.
And Megan just overpowered the competition on the block, and once that happened, they focused on her, and I was able to open up Soraya in the middle, and I think that was really when the Wolves started to pull away.
Reed led the Lady Wolves offense with 17 points, followed by 80 with 13. Freshman Sydney Riggs scored 9, Katina Wathen 6, Carly Fuller 5, Kendall Phippen, Kelsey Kubik, and Hunter Huddleston each scored 2. The Lady Wolves will play Craig for the title this afternoon at 3 p.m. Vieira says a first-round bye is a mixed blessing at the regional tournament. Both the Sitka girls and boys teams sat out a day. He thinks it took the Wolves some extra time to find their game against Metlakatla yesterday.
Metlakatla's guards put a lot of pressure on and kind of disrupted things. So the Wolves put up a little bit more shots from the outside than they usually do. At halftime, you could definitely tell the coaches talked about going into the post. And the first three possessions out of halftime, they went right to Bay Widmeyer in the post. And kind of turned things around, and Bay ended up finishing the game with 21 points.
Widmeyer was the high scorer for the game, with balanced scoring and single digits for the rest of the Wolves squad, with one exception. Sophomore Brian Way scored 10 points all in the second half of the game, and he went 4-for-4 from the free throw line in the final quarter, putting it out of reach for the Chiefs. The Sitka Wolves will meet Mount Edgecombe in this afternoon's final. Yesterday, the Braves eked out a win over Haynes in one of the lowest-scoring varsity games Vieira says he's ever seen. The final score was 27-24. Vieira says Mount Edgecombe's strategy focused on containing Haynes's big man, 6'6" Tyler Swinton, and controlling the ball.
It was definitely a tactical approach that Coach Young deployed. Jalen Prince got in foul trouble along with a couple guards in the first half. And with about 4 minutes left in the second quarter, Coach Young put his team into a stall on the offensive end, and they ran out the last 4 minutes of the second quarter. Just passing the ball around, working for a shot. They missed the shot, but they ran 4 minutes straight right off the clock without changing possession of the ball.
Sitka has beaten Mount Edgecombe twice in close games this year, an event known as the Battle of the Bridge. But the Braves are the defending champs, having beaten Sitka last year in the tournament. The teams will meet today for the regional title at 4:45 p.m. Both 3A championship games will be broadcast in Sitka over KIFW AM 1230. You can link to the live webcast at our website, kcaw.org. In the 1A-2A tournament happening in Sitka this week, both Yakutat teams have lived up to their billing and advanced to the finals. The Yakutat girls beat Skagway yesterday 54-25 and will meet Klawock for the championship tonight at 6:15 p.m. in the B.J. McGillis Gym on the campus of Mount Edgecombe High School. The top-seeded Klawock girls defeated Angoon yesterday 74-36 to earn their spot in today's final. The Yakutat boys bumped Thorn Bay to the loser's bracket yesterday with a win of 74-43. Yakutat will play Heidelberg for the championship tonight at 8 p.m. Heidelberg beat Klawock yesterday in the semifinal, 46-40. Raven Radio will bring you live coverage of tonight's 2A regional championship games, beginning with the girls at 6:15 p.m. with host Kim Hansen. You can find a link to the live webcast at our website, kcaw.org. You might have noticed a yellow plane and helicopter circling over Sitka yesterday morning. They belong to the Royal Canadian Air Force. The Canadian airmen are in Sitka this week to engage in joint training exercises with the U.S. Coast Guard. KCAW's Ed Ronco went over to Air Station Sitka before the snow moved in yesterday and filed this report.
It would have been something to see were it not for Thursday's bad weather. parachutists jumping out of the back of an airplane over Eastern Channel, a huge Canadian helicopter hovering over the salt water as a Coast Guard boat bobs underneath. But the snow had other plans. The aircraft from Vancouver Island, along with the Coast Guard's own MH-60 helicopter, managed to get up in the air for a little while on Thursday, but as the snowflakes moved in and visibility moved out, they returned to Air Station Sitka and put the training exercises on hold. Before they took off, Lieutenant Chris Enochson walked me through the hangar at Air Station Sitka.
So here's our helicopters, and you can just see the sheer size difference between the aircraft that we're using in their search and rescue helicopter.
The Coast Guard Jayhawk is dwarfed by the Canadian Cormorant, a huge yellow chopper with three engines, a ramp coming off the back, and a series of windows on both sides. The word rescue is emblazoned in English, and underneath it, the same in French, sauvetage. What the Coast Guard might call a rescue swimmer, Enochson says, the Canadian Air Force calls a SAR tech, or search and rescue technician.
The fact that they have SAR techs that are capable of doing a larger envelope of work by doing paradrops and working in two-man teams, there's a lot to be gained from the two different, and they have a lot to gain from our swimmers who work pretty much independently.
And because of Alaska's proximity to Canada, Enochson says there's a high probability that the two organizations will end up working together at some point in time.
It's great to have that camaraderie that we know that we know their techniques and their capabilities, and they know our techniques and our capabilities.
Outside the hangar, the huge Buffalo plane, also yellow, also emblazoned with the maple leaf and the word rescue in two languages, is waiting to go. It also has a back ramp, which is hanging wide open, and inside you can see all kinds of rescue gear, including snowshoes.
A big portion of their search and rescue is inland, so these guys will jump out and be in the middle of Canada, up in the mountains. They do a lot of rescues of plane crashes and lost hikers. And so they leave the aircraft with an enormous amount of equipment.
Captain Dave Stubbs is navigator of the Canadian CC-115 Buffalo. He says the chance to train with military from another country happens regularly, but not often.
It's probably limited to about twice a year is where we can go out and do some combined training. I mean, there's lots of different people who do the same job, so we share that experience around. So this time it got to be my turn to come up and do this, but yeah, sometime next time it's going to be another person who gets to come and do it.
And Stubbs agrees that doing this training now could make a big difference later.
In real operations, at some point we're going to have to work together when, you know, in the dark of night and stormy seas and stuff like that, we're going to have to work together. And so getting these training opportunities to come together and work now in a training environment will just open lines of communication and enable us to get those missions done down the road.
Out on the ramp, the U.S. Jayhawk lifts off first. It circles around and hovers near the end of the runway so a film crew from the Weather Channel can capture the takeoff of the Buffalo. The Jayhawk follows it down the runway, then circles around again to do the same for the Canadian chopper. The aircraft did spend a little time in the air, and Thursday's training exercises didn't entirely work out, but there's always next time, and for now, at least a glimpse of how rescues happen on the other side of the border. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Ed Ronco.
You can see a slideshow of the Canadian aircraft on our website, kcaw.org. Guided fishermen will have to return deepwater rockfish to a safe depth under a plan approved this week by the Alaska Board of Fisheries. The proposal is an unusual compromise between longliners and charter boat operators. Coast Alaska's Ed Schoenfeld reports.
Yellow eye live a couple hundred feet below the ocean's surface, so the rockfish usually die when they're reeled in because of the difference in pressure. That occurs when fishermen are over the limit and throw them back.
It does happen relatively frequently, and particularly with declining halibut stocks, there's increased pressure on DSR resources.
That's Heath Hilliard, executive director of the Southeast Alaska Guides Organization. The group, called SEAGO, represents about 40 regional charter boat operators. DSR is short for demersal shelf rockfish, a group of nearshore bottom dwellers. Yellow eye are the most sought. They're sometimes called Pacific red snapper or red rock cod. A variety of devices can be used to return the rockfish safely. The most basic are weighted milk crates.
Essentially, they're put in the crate upside down, dropped, and then they pull the line back up, and the fish can swim away at depth, increasing survivability. Reverse hooks, a variety of different mechanisms that can be used that ultimately bring the fish back down to a reasonable depth where they can survive, and then, you know, pull back the line.
He says up to 90% of caught rockfish survive when quickly returned to deep waters. Only about 10% make it when released on the surface. Despite many battles over halibut, longliners and charter groups worked together on the compromise that was passed. Benkin says the plan originally included individual sport fishermen, but that changed on the advice of the Department of Fish and Game staff.
They suggested that we make it charter only because of the implications of educating every sport angler about having to have one of these devices and release at depth. And then we both signed on.
Longliners mostly target halibut, not yellow-eye, so their harvest is bycatch they're allowed to keep within limits. But the guide organization's Hilliard says more charters are chasing the rockfish.
It's not a species that a lot of our guys go out of their way to target, but it's a natural bycatch for particularly halibut. So, and with halibut declining, you know, there's increased pressure because it's an additional species that, you know, clients can catch.
The safe release requirement goes into effect next year. Hilliard calls it a key conservation measure. This is Ed Schoenfeld reporting from the Board of Fisheries meeting in Ketchikan.
You can see a video showing how a safe release device works. It's posted with this story on our website at kcaw.org. Zone weather forecast today for Sitka and Port Alexander calls for mostly cloudy skies with scattered rain showers mixing with snow showers at times in the morning. Little or no snow accumulation, highs around 41. Southwest winds 10 to 20 miles per hour. Tomorrow, mostly cloudy, chance of rain showers, highs around 39. This is KCAW in Sitka.